Hi, my name is Jeanette Lee, and we're doing this interview on October 1st, 2010.
And my name is Klaus Poser from Freiburg, Germany, class 5556, Bologna Center.
And now, Doctor, what first brought you to SAIS in Bologna? Why did you decide to enroll?
Well, I have to admit it was accidental, because I went through our university in Freiburg and saw the advertisement of the scholarship and thought it would be a good idea after my diploma to attend postgraduate courses exactly in this field, because I was preparing my doctoral thesis on European integration.
Oh, okay. And I hear that European integration was a favorite class.
Exactly. And well, it was not only a favorite class, but it was the whole atmosphere, because we were just in the process of creating Europe. The Montan Union was created, and we were going for further European unification and cooperation.
Mm-hmm. And what was your impression of SAIS in Bologna when you first arrived?
Yeah, this is very interesting. First of all, I didn't find my hostel. It was still closed, and then they said, in San Donato, you will find American students. So this was my first encounter with my colleagues, and it was a nice encounter and beginning. And I think concerning the city, it was a fantastic atmosphere, and you took in everything, and it was absolutely new, and this old city, La Dotta, La Rosa, La Grassa. But then I think after a quarter of a year, we were all Bolognesi. You know, the city was very hospitable, very nice, very kind, and with a good also dialogue structure. And SAIS itself had with me a reputation, university and a school in which you have to work very, very hard. Mm-hmm. And because it was a foreign campus, the American colleagues had to even work harder. And it was true indeed, but it was something where from the motivation, you know, European integration and transatlantic dialogue, we got a lot of motivation, you know, to do this.
Mm-hmm. What courses did you take? Do you remember?
Yeah, this is really straining my memory. I took the labor movement of Federico Mancini, diplomatic history of Professor Haynes, economics with De Maria, and also with Professor Loftus, Alfred Grosser was there also with the French labor movement. So it was quite a bunch, but unfortunately I can't tell you the exact order. I should have perhaps looked in your archives.
And outside of class, what did you generally spend your time doing when you weren't studying or going to class?
Well, first of all, we participated in the political events. Bologna at that time had a communist mayor, and there was a lot of interaction also with the Christian Democratic Party. And we were there at election time with Dossetti, who was almost a holy man in the Christian Democratic Party, and Dotzer. But I think that in general, Dotzer had a very good backing. So one was participating in the political dialogue. The other one was also that we organized trips, especially with people who had fortunately a car, to other places in the neighborhood, like Verona or Lucca. And yeah, and then there was, I think, also appreciably quite social life. Professor Haynes was very sensitive, and I think even in the way that he sensed there's something coming up. Mm-hmm. So he invited us for dinner or lunch, groups of students, but also the students interacted, invited each other, and especially those who had a flat, those who were living in the collegium, or collegio rather. And so it was quite a mix, and of course the arts and theater in Bologna were very good. We went to the opera. It was of course astounding for at least a German to see the Italian audience, you know, mm-hmm. participating in Covantina or in the music and in the play. It was a good time.
And now, when you were at Seis, what did you expect that the school would allow you to do after you graduated? Or what was your, I guess, what were your goals?
I think one was to get intimate knowledge, more intimate knowledge, but also a feeling by studying in an international student body about the European integration and my doctoral thesis. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking that I would finish that one then in 2 years' time, but unfortunately it took another 6 years. This was the one expectation, the other, the transatlantic dialogue. Because that was another affair, you know, in 55 military blocs had been sharpening their positions. And it was important that we understood the Americans, because we were always saying they are our cousins, but they really tick a little bit different. And you need to know how they tick in order to understand and to cooperate and to interpret. You know, so I was expecting that I would learn a lot for my further academic career, but also for interpretation, for mediation, for the work in international affairs.
Mm-hmm. And what did you learn that was new about Americans?
Yeah. I had one little wow, because I thought one class was, or one lecture was too superficial. You know, it was giving evidences, statistics, morphology and so on, but not going behind it, you know, to go to the reasons, to the sources. And by not doing it, to betray yourself in the realization what is really happening. And I think that there was this impression that this was an American lecture, that there was this impression that we could do a little bit more searching, mm-hmm. for the background, for the things which are behind the appearances. And but I think in general, I appreciate also the width and the openness. We didn't only have lectures, we had also guest lectures. Mm-hmm. And the variety of the presentations was a great enrichment. Mm-hmm.
And after you left Seis, what did you do next?
I went back to Freiburg, to my university, where I took out the diploma, and became an assistant to the Institute of Agricultural Policy. And then this was the reason why the promotion took longer, because the teaching job and the assistance in the research was absorbing quite a lot of time. But it was first the idea to continue in the academic career.
And then, I mean, you went on to do so much, I mean, so many other things. Can you sort of talk through the progression of your career and how one thing led to another?
Yeah, contrary to the United States, where you had the students' rebellions already in '64, especially in Berkeley, which we witnessed very close by being in Stanford, which was more quiet university. We had this in the 68-69 period. And somehow we got into trouble also continuing our career. So when I was offered the general secretariat of a Protestant development agency, I took the chance and said, okay, enough of theory and research, and now I go into practical work. And I have not regretted it. It was a very good time, first with this organization, which was handling government funds for development cooperation with churches. So we had a very strong cooperation with the American relief organizations and the churches in this country. Mm-hmm. And then after 16 years, I changed to the World Council of Churches. They had commission for interchurch aid, refugee and world service. So it was a continuation, if you like, on the ecumenical level, you know, with the churches worldwide. Mm-hmm. And I think that still size of the Bologna Center has given me a lot of resource and practice in how to go about with an international with international partners. Mm-hmm. It was for me very important, I think, also to have this experience.
What was your impression of your fellow students when you first, or during that year, you know, how did you get along, and what did you think, what were they like?
Yeah, this is also a very interesting question. You know, we were really four groups, and somehow there was, in the first instance, some realization, as I said before, Europeans, Americans. But then the third element were the Italian students. So you know, after getting acquainted and getting in solidarity and so on, it was with American-European friendship really developed, but we had a little bit problem with the Italians. Maybe because it was their home country, but they remained a kind of individualistic part. But then after all, I mean, also in retrospect, I think during the year we all grew together. And one of our French colleagues, he brought it on one level, he said, maybe it was less academic, but what it was European, a European understanding, growing and European understanding also for a future Europe. And it was especially the international constituency, the international dimension of it, of seeing that in this world context of that time also, we need to support each other, to understand each other, and to cooperate. Mm-hmm. So I think we there are pictures of the farewell party. I think at the end we had a very good group together.
Wow. And what was it like to live in post-war Italy? Were there a lot of, I mean, I know it was like 10 years afterwards, but was there still any, could you detect any, you know, lingering effects from the war?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you have to ask me really, how did I find Italy as a German? Mm-hmm. Because that was also another dimension. We had a very hard winter, and the mayor called in the contadini from the Po Valley who were suffering in order to get away the snow and the ice. But for each group of 10, he needed a capo, you know, a head of the group. Uh-huh. And that had to be somebody who could write and read. So he was calling on students, and we also, Size was asked, Bologna Center, we were also asked. And the Germans volunteered to do this, and also some of the others, though the Americans, I think they called us yellow dogs.
Wait, what is the yellow dog?
A yellow dog is somebody who breaks the rules, the trade union rules of you have to adhere to a group, leave this to the others. Uh-huh. So, and I went there as a kapu, and then in one group I was circled around by a young man who then said, I can't understand this, are there still Germans living? You know, when the war ended, all were dead. They were all lying on our roads and they were dead. So this encounter, I mean, this is a little picture, but this you found also with others. And especially there was among some, also of our Italian colleagues, a kind of anti-German atmosphere, which I sometimes found trying. But in general, I mean, it was also, it's difficult to make a difference then between joke and seriousness and so on. Mm-hmm. So that was in this, but on the other hand, the city, I said this before, La Dotta, La Casa e La Rosa, was very friendly. I remember that we were going out on a place and there were young people, 17, maybe 15, 17 years old, a little bit older. And we got into a discussion and we went there almost, not every day, but you know, frequently, and they were there and we were there. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing, this has obviously changed in Italy today, at that time, the matrimonium, you know, was very, very harsh. There were always mothers around, so we could talk with them for 1.5 or 2 hours. We were marching, walking around, but then the mothers took a turn and the whole group had to go with them home.
Wow.
You know, there was no breaking away, either for young people to love or with us to go on, you know. But so this was one. And the other was, was also an openness when we had an occasion, let's say, in one of the circles, the discussion circles in the town. I think it was always lively, it was always nice, and we did also a little bit of dancing.
Oh,
yeah.
That's fun. And so did you discuss the war with your classmates? Did you discuss the war with your classmates at all? I mean,
the war?
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, it was also in the lectures. We had one lecture course on governmental structures on conducting wars and so on. Mm-hmm. So it was even in and of course we discussed the war.
Mm-hmm. And how did these discussions, I mean, were they uncomfortable at all or just interesting? I mean, how would you characterize them?
Yeah, maybe it was different from different points of view. For instance, with the French, I think we knew how important the friendship between and cooperation between our countries would be. Mm-hmm. And one of our French colleagues put it in two of those words. He said, we, the French, are making Europe with the Germans against Germany.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the background being how to harness the German strength, the German potential aggressiveness into something. And Europe was really the answer, you know, by through togetherness. So this was a very productive and very open and determined discussion. And with the Americans, it was different because there it was the question: America was the protective power. You know, and we knew at the border, of course, what would happen if the Americans would run away or something like that, which they wouldn't do. But anyhow, it was a different kind of discussing matters. And then, of course, with the Italians or Austrians, of course, the Austrians were very happy because they had their Österreich is free, you know, the liberation of Austria, mm-hmm. in October, on the 20th or around the 20th of October. They were, of course, joyful, rejoicing, and we were, the Germans were in a little bit sad situation because this didn't happen to our country and was not foreseeable at all. So so it was a kind of different setting with different people, different motivations and backgrounds. But it was, I think, in toto, it was a very important and enlightening learning process.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And now, when did the two of you meet?
Ah, that's a very good question. I would never have met her if I wouldn't have gone to the Bologna Center, because her brother, Raimund Jochumsen, who became then a professor at Zeiss, later times, he was my colleague at my time, and he was the third German, we were three, Gottfried Eberts was the other one. And so when I went back as an assistant in 57, Gunnar started her medical studies in Freiburg, and we met, mm-hmm. and the rest.
Wow! So it was. Zeiss was very instrumental,
exactly,
in your marriage. Oh, I like that. That's great. And so after Zeiss, let's see. Oh, I guess the question is, what would historians want to know about your career and accomplishments? Although. That might be difficult for you because you have a lot.
Can you repeat this?
Let's see. I guess if you were to rephrase this, what do you consider the highlights or the most important accomplishments in your life?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's really an extraordinary question. Well, first of all, I was tremendously lucky, because when I joined the Potsdam Central Agency for Development Cooperation, my boss, Bishop Kunst was his name, he said, I'm handing over to you a ship-shaped ship. Please give it an adequate course in development policy and cooperation. And I think it was a gift, you know, if you are entrusted in such a way, you also do your best. So I think I would say it was the end of the first development decade of the 60s. We were entering the 70s. There was a critical potential for the first decade. So how to translate development cooperation, not by terms of emergency or capital transfer or all those things which are connected with the Marshall Plan, because that doesn't work with these societies, but how to find out that you need also community-based approach, emancipation, gender, all these things which are now commonplace, gender equity and so on. So I think I have helped to redirect or to bring our development cooperation into some kind of a meaningful and self-critical and also regenerating course. And I have helped in your city, what is it, city bank building in New York, the big one, mm-hmm. a lecture to the gathered church people of the United States, because, you know, they had difficulties to realize that it's not emergency or the PL 480 stuff, but it's really getting people mobilized to also to address their own affairs. And I think this, I could continue also on an international with the ecumenical through the World Council of Churches by also saying or organizing regional fora, which would then in Africa or Asia or in other places, which would define their development aims and needs locally, rather than us saying you have to do this or that. So maybe it was a kind of qualitative input, or also, you know, with a kind of self-critical approach, saying we need to again and again address the situation in a way which is defined and also meeting the needs, the local, rather the local needs and concepts.
Mm-hmm. And now what advice would you have for SAI students today?
Can you say this?
What advice would you give to students of SAI today?
Yeah, I think it is important to be a critical consumer of academic products or deliveries, you know, to read more, to, because you cannot avoid bias or routines and things like that. And I think it is necessary to have a wide view and to have to look for the backgrounds and to have especially a critical view. And I think this we learned also at the Bologna Center. But as I said before, you know, we had also to express it, and sometimes it was not easy to express it. But I think students should be courageous to raise their voice, to offer alternative views, to put them into the discussion, and to go with it.
Mm-hmm. And do you have children yourself? Do you have children?
Yes, three.
Three children.
Wonderful children. Wonderful boys.
Okay. And are they? Are any of them interested in international relations? Or
well, the one, perhaps the youngest by profession, because he is a chief economist of a small Swiss bank.
Oh, okay.
And he is, so there is his international relationship. Mm-hmm. And the others may be a little bit less international. Mm. But one is in IT technology, and I think he has also something, but not in the sense which I mean, SAIS would stand for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now you do a lot of work with Africa.
Yes.
Is that right? I guess what got you interested in Africa?
Well, maybe it was just by chance, because one of my old friends, he said, you have to come and cooperate with us in this organization, which is called in German, Aktion Afrika Hilfe, and in English, Action Africa Help International, with its Nairobi headquarters. And I joined them, and it's a fantastic work. They are having programs in South Sudan, Uganda, Kenya, Somalia, Zambia, and they are already working since almost 20 years, and you can find them in the internet with their website. And it is essentially, I think this is our message, a community-based approach. Every community can have food security, for instance, and can have its own setup of healing and peace and reconciliation. But it needs strengthening support from that side. And I think we have been quite, well, in a way, I would say it's successful in implementing these ideas, these visions. Mm-hmm. And I think I found many, it's a completely African affair. I mean, I'm the only person, the only European board member, all the others are African, so it's their own thing, because we decided in 2003 for devolution that we can't do these things out of Munich and out of Germany, that we need an authentic African management and board, and therefore I think it's wonderful to work with these people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And why are you interested? Why did you become interested in Africa?
I my background is really the world. As a director of SICOWAS, the commission in Geneva, or as a general secretary of the Protestant agency, I was involved with the whole world. I was traveling also the whole world. But there was always Africa as a major part of our cooperation. Mm-hmm. So when this question came from my friend, you know, I said, okay, I will do this. So there is not, I wouldn't say Africa was a special reason, you know, enlightenment or something.
Yeah.
But it was using my capacity, my experience in this field because it was asked for.
Oh, I guess I don't. Where are you living now?
Mm.
Do you move? Do you relocate a lot, or are you based somewhere and then just do a lot of traveling from that?
Yeah. No. We live in Freiburg, in the southwest of Germany, one of the most beautiful towns on the Rhine and on the Black Forest, and neighboring France and neighboring Switzerland. So we are quite international, and. We like the people, and we like especially the wine, which they
Oh, yeah. That's great. Well, I don't know that I have any other questions, but did you want to add anything else to...
Well, I think we covered almost everything. No, I think your questions were very pertinent and very good. But I wouldn't offhand, except maybe, okay, I would like to say this. I think a venture like the Bologna Center very much depends on sensitive, enlightened people with a worldview, like I think our professor, Sigur Pains. You know, I think that his immediate relationship with students, his view, his mobilizing also the support of the Italian and the European groups, governments, banks, and so on, was very important. And I think, and I hope that Bologna is not only a kind of co-learning place, but a place with a corporate, developing a corporate identity of the two togetherness, which I felt we were really arriving at, and which I think is also demonstrated by our meeting today. 55 years, and there are quite a lot of people here, and it's very wonderful to see them, to meet with them, to share and to find how much togetherness there was. So I would say it is important that these campuses have this kind of, or develop this kind of corporate identity within a year or so, this friendship which has definitely not only been leading my attitude and contribution to making Europe a Europe, but also for the continuous transatlantic dialogue.
And have you visited Bologna since?
Yes.
Okay.
I even don't know how many times.
Oh.
The last time was at the 50th anniversary, which was very nice. But I was there before in 67, I remember, because on the Piazza Maggiore there was a big demonstration against the invasion of Czechoslovakia by the Eastern Bloc armies. And I was also in this talking, you know, discussing. And somebody said, but you don't speak Italian. And then I realized I was speaking Spanish because my professional life was Spanish speaking. So that was in 67. And then there was a wonderful meeting in 2000 or before in the 90s. Where we had
I think it was the 40th.
Yeah, the 40th, probably.
Yeah.
95.
Yeah. Well, we had a fantastic meeting also. Yeah. So, and I think many of the directors also following Haynes were very good persons. Mm-hmm. So one liked to go back.
And do you keep in touch with your former classmates?
Well, with some. I mean, especially because I think it's a mutual encouragement with Mary Lee Lincoln. Mm-hmm. You know, and she put into my head a boat ride on the Potomac. And unfortunately, it doesn't. We can't realize it this time. But I think way back she said, oh, we must have a boat ride on the Potomac. So we were always dreaming, I was dreaming of this boat ride on the Potomac because we have such things on the Rhine, you know, with boats, and they are always wonderful. So I thought, okay, Potomac is another river to explore. Mm-hmm. And well, with some I keep touch, but of course, unfortunately, our ways departed. And looking back and seeing how many cutting points we are having, you know, like work some like Mary Lee worked with USAID, we worked with USAID, so maybe and in the same countries. So I guess if we explored, and I say that in that time I've been in Bangladesh or someplace, she would say, yes, I was there also, you know, next door. And it's a pity, in retrospect, that we didn't keep this up to then also to cooperate and to share, you know, because I think with this kind of gift from the beginning, we could have had another professional dialogue. Mm-hmm. So I would also encourage, you know, keep your good colleagues in mind and in memory, because it may be that there are points, crossing points in their career, which are mutually beneficial.
Yeah, that is good advice. Okay, well, I didn't have anything else. But
neither do I.
I'm sure you all want to go to dinner. Thank you so much for talking with us.